with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! My sincere apologies for my absence last night. I hate missing more in Monday. Or Titanic Tuesday, or Prayer Meeting Wednesday, or Thorn in the Side Thursday, or Friday on the Front Porch. I hate missing on any of them, but I hated missing last night. Thank you very kindly, Jeremy in Vermont. Loud and clear on TuneIn Report. Hope you're feeling much better. Thank you for the kind thoughts. I'm not. But that's just my cross to bear. Bear to cross. I don't know. I've been, well, okay, the short story for those of you who don't know it. Several years ago now, I wound up in the hospital for a couple of days. Got treated for what we found out was a combination of events that begin with the fact that I'm a really special guy. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. Jump into the chat room if you want to, please, and enjoy yourself immensely. And, yeah, one of those for everybody who was there at the beginning of the program. Good evening, Anatole. Good evening, Jeremy. Good evening, Paul. Good evening, Ralph. Texas D, and, of course, all capably moderated by inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator, Sparky. Anyway. I was having horrendous gut pain a few years ago, and we found out that, I'm a special guy. That's where we were. I'm a special guy. And by that, I mean that I have, and it's either an evolutionary process, a mutation, or a birth defect, depending on how you prefer to look at it, I have this thing about one in every million humans born on this planet, and when you consider the number of humans on this planet now, it's really, actually, it's not that special. But about one in every million human beings on this planet, their gut doesn't develop right. And I happen to be one of those one in a millions. Not quite enough to make me run out and you know, bet the farm on the lottery or anything, but instead of having my innards go where everybody else's innards go, mine just sort of wobble around, and they're all kind of crammed over into one space against a bunch of other things, and that creates problems which create other problems which create other problems which periodically make me sort of double up in just mind-bending pain. This is one of those times. And I'm also not prone to seeking medical attention unless absolutely necessary. And it finally got to that point yesterday, and I just looked at the boss and said, honey, let's go over and spend a fruitless and meaningless evening at the emergency room, which we then did. 8 hours. They hung a bag of saline. They said, how much is your pain? I said, a lot. As if the fact that, you know, I was grimacing with every step, bent over, you know, moving like a guy 40 years older than me. So they hung a bag of saline, they dripped a bag of saline into me, they shot a CT of my belly, and said, well, too bad about that pain, sir. Goodbye. No, really. The first time this flared up, there was no mincing of words. They dosed me and sent me home with a prescription for enough pain medication to knock down a bull elephant for a good reason. Because the purpose was to slow my gut down, which pain medications will do, and shut everything down, let the inflammation go away, and, you know, nothing but clear liquids. I lost about 30, 40 pounds in about 4 weeks. Well, we can't do that anymore. We can't do that anymore because we've got people like my senator, Joe Manchin, running around going, brooga, 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 drug problem, brooga, brooga. So people who have tremendous mind-bending pain in Appalachia now can't get any relief. I'm one of those people periodically. But thank God I'm not addicted to pain medication. You know, like Rush Limbaugh. Now, I'm sure if Rush Limbaugh showed up at my little hospital, they would give him all the pain medication he wanted. But am I bitter? No, I'm not bitter. I'm just in pain. So that's the short, brief story. Yeah, I got a bunch of inflammation in my gut. I got me some antibiotics, and it looks like I'm going to be hurting for quite a while. Oops. Well, you know, that God made Appalachia to train the painful. Because, see, pain medications do get abused in this state and in this region because so many people have been broken on the rack of industries that basically are predicated on that industry's ability to shatter people into a million tiny pieces and leave them ruined wrecks along the way once they are no longer useful. Now, we wouldn't want them to have a pain medication addiction, now would we? Interestingly, one of the few things that never gets talked about is that opiate addictions are completely manageable. It just becomes addiction maintenance. Kind of like smoking is addiction maintenance. But no, it is just presumed that hillbillies can't help themselves and we'll just be out there chewing up our pain medication for the refreshing burst of flavor, at least the ones that we don't run screaming down the sidewalk, "Yeehaw, I got me a pain med script!" And then we stand there and auction them to the highest bidder on the sidewalk. Because, you know, hillbillies, stupid. No, we auction our pain meds so that then we can go and buy the cheaper heroin, which will give us a real nice Jones. Oh, Texas T is right in the chat room. You don't become a Sherlock Holmes-level addict on a script of Vicodin. You don't. And, in fact, I had a whopping big script of the stuff, a month's worth of it. And you know what? When it was time to quit taking it and the pain was gone, quit taking it. And never jonesed or got cranky with anybody. That only happens if you try to get me off nicotine. So, and you know, we're a very pious people here in the mountains of Appalachia. So, you know, well, Jesus suffered on the cross for you. Can't you suffer a little bit like Jesus? Right? Yeah. Thank you, Ralphs. Ralphs in the chat room asking, how's the fundraising going, Bob? I want to send out some thanks. Thanks are definitely due. Even though I was not on the air last night, thank you, Robert in Australia, very kindly for putting forward your usual 20th of the month up over down under challenge. Robert went ahead and did it anyway, even though I wasn't there to issue the challenge. He put forward $50 Australian and asked kindly for someone to kick in $50 American to match it. Thank you also to Bill. Bill helped out a big way as well. And thank you to Little, L-I-T-L, who finished everything off so that we're okay for the time being. Well, we were okay for last night, and we've got, you know, the usual week's funding to raise, or thereabouts, and hopefully we won't get terribly, terribly, well, we're not behind. Hopefully we won't be that way. And if we raise the usual evening's $200 this evening, we won't. The general reminder obtains. The PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com. And the mailing address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV, 25801. With the general reminder on the mail-ins that checks and money orders should be made payable to The Horn and not me, because I don't ever see them. That's what Boss Man Wayne does. And the mailbox is actually about 50 miles away from here. Okay, so I really hated not being on the air last night. And I hated not having Dr. Bill on the air yesterday, but it was just impossible. Yeah, see, Devin asking, is this what happens when you forget to do your biannual physics with the castor oil? Don't even say castor oil, please. Please. No, this is just what happens when one thing lights up another thing, and something, a duct backs up and fills with sludge, and blah, 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 and the next thing you know, old Bob's wandering around going, oh, God! Because that was basically, yeah. But I am determined to, this is my world. In many ways, this is my world. And so, when I don't get to be on the air, I am unhappy. And Agnes knows this, Margie knows this, Berg knows this. Everybody knows that. So, when I can muster up the gumption to be here, I'll be here. And then, you know, maybe as soon as the program's over, I'll go fleeing back into the bedroom and just try to knock myself down for another 12 hours. Well, I mean, it's kind of, well, there's no knocking myself down until it's time to go again. Oh, a little program note warning. We've had a line of thunderstorms rolling through, and there's every possibility in the world that the antiquated coal-fired Appalachian Power electrical grid will go down at some point in time this evening. The uninterruptible power supplies here, one of which was kindly provided by our good friend Randy, the uninterruptible power supplies here will keep things going long enough for me to say goodbye. But if I say goodbye precipitously, it's not because, you know, well, it'll be because the power done went out. Okay. Here it is. It is a delightful 94 degrees here in the Horn Studio sauna. And so I will go as long as I can this evening. And let's hope that it's the whole 3 hours, shall we? It's going to get dramatically cooler in here. The previous air conditioner, well, it went to its long home about 2 days ago, and thanks very kindly to an anonymous contributor, a new air conditioner is in the process of installation. However, when the thunderstorm started rolling through, the supervisor of installation activities, otherwise known as Agnes, Viking Warrior Princess, said, "Nope, we're stopping now," and so we did. But by this time tomorrow, this place should be cool and comfortable. Maybe even downright frigid. Wouldn't that be lovely? So anyway, I hated being away from the microphone yesterday evening. But it seemed unavoidable insofar as we needed to go and perform our act of medical futility over at the ER. futile because, you know, there was nothing in the way of relief offered. See above. Hillbilly. Didn't see a physician. Just saw not a doctor. And we chatted and talked and talked about how bad it hurt. And she knows because, you know, her husband has something similar, of course. You've got an aunt in Roanoke. But anyway, it was an eight-hour waste of time, three of which could have been spent here, sort of grimacing and getting through the 3 hours. But at least we would have had our conversation. Thank you, Ralphs, for getting us started. Much appreciated. On the evening. Much appreciated indeed. That goes a long way toward meeting Robert's Up Over Down Under challenge, which is very nice as well. Thank you. But I hated being away from the microphone because I hate it when I'm not around and there's something that seems momentous developing, because usually we manage to have some sort of a conversation where we find out that there's more involved than we even suspected. Such is the case now. Because, and I don't know any way to put this other than plainly and bluntly, anyone who for a moment thinks that what Nimrata Haley did in South Carolina in calling for that miserable rag to be removed from the Capitol grounds is either drunk, self-deluded, or intentionally disingenuous. Because, see, it doesn't take a hell of a lot of courage to call for something to happen when you have absolutely no power whatsoever to make the thing that you want to happen, happen. To wit, the removal of that filthy, blood-soaked rag there in Columbia, South Carolina. You know, the sign of their heritage. The sign of their willingness to commit treason against the rest of the country. It doesn't take any courage to say something like that when you know that the legislature is not going to meet in regular session for months, a half a year maybe, and that at that point in time it's going to take a two-thirds majority vote of both houses of the legislature to remove that disgusting rag. See? See, what did I tell you? But nonetheless, she is being bruited about. By outfits and people like Chris Saliza at the Washington Post. This from a Daily Coast diary that our good friend Jug of Punch sent along. Media report false sightings of Halley's Comet by John Purr. Oh, they're all just twittering all over the place. Nikki Haley continues to impress, poised, thoughtful, and empathetic, says Chris Saliza of the Washington Post. Lisa Lurer says, this feels like a good moment for Nikki Haley's VP prospects. And don't think for a minute that it isn't. Because, see, on the GOP side of American politics, anybody who isn't outward, who isn't just wandering around mumbling nigger all the time, is considered to be practically Dr. King. And make no mistake, this really did just catapult Nimrata Haley right into the heart of the vice presidential sweepstakes. I had said earlier that I thought Joni Ernst of Iowa would be in the vice presidential timber category, and I think she probably still is. She's certainly stupid enough. And she's got, you know, the whiteness going for her and the veteranness going for her. Oh, but really? South Carolina? A woman of color? A Republican? Who has called for South Carolina to march boldly into the 20th century? Well, now that's some timber. Timber! Yeah. And it was part of the cold and brutal political calculus that was considered before she ever stepped to the microphone. There's a reason that Rince Priebus of the Royal Imodium Mounted Dragoons and his trusty possum Splat were standing there right behind her, looking adoringly upon her. That meant something. Uh-huh. So, I hope no one was fooled. I mean, can you even begin to imagine the debate? Because there will be a debate. Now, the legislature of South Carolina, Stan, has an interim session coming up, but it's only about the budget, and they can't do any. They won't consider the flag issue. No, they won't. That will have to be considered in regular session, which, of course, will not come around for several months now. And the debate is going to be an absolute jolly affair. And let me offer as a caveat, I'm not doing prophecy work here. I'm merely extrapolating my impression of future events based upon past practices, and that ain't prophecy. I will also add that I really, really hope I'm wrong. But I'm pretty sure I'm not. Eh? I mean, wasn't it just darling, or as they say, dorling, wasn't it just dorling, how Nimrata stepped to the microphone and congratulated South Carolina for not being all like Ferguson and Baltimore? Yeah, Nimrata's not the brightest bulb in the chandelier. That wasn't a cop who killed those 9 people in the Emmanuel AME church either, now, was it? No, it wasn't. And, of course, it's South Carolina, and based upon the Walter Scott case, had it been necessary to call out law enforcement, God only knows how many other people of color would have been shot, preferably in the back like Walter Scott was. We are a long, long way from any kind of closure and or healing, as they like to call it, in this matter. Because, as I said, there will be a debate in the legislature. Because, you know, power is self-entrenching. So don't kid yourself. Don't think for a minute that legislature in South Carolina isn't made up in large part, Senate and House alike, by the great-great-great-great-grandsons and great-great-great-great-granddaughters, all of them Republicans, of the same bunch who hollered, "Fire!" 155 years ago. And there will be an absolutely stultifying, maddening, disgusting floor debate in which the word heritage is bruited about as a dog whistle code word for we're still racists and we're having a hard time letting go. Irony of ironies, because, you know, the goddess looks after me. So while we were waiting yesterday to be to get an exam room, because the ER there was full, I mean, bulging at the walls, you have little other choice than to sit there and read 6 and 7 months and sometimes 6 and 7 year old magazines. As if the goddess of irony had placed it right there on the end table next to my chair, her very own self, was the December 2014 issue of some magazine with a great big picture of Paula Deen on it. I looked at Agnes, Agnes looked at me, we both looked at the magazine and went, there are no coincidences. This is not a boating accident. And it was Paula Deen's suggestions for the merriest of Christmases. We all, of course, remember what it was that got Paula Deen into such hot water. Among other things, wanting to put genteel antebellum livery on little black children and have them running about the party, or maybe adult black people, I don't know. And the fact that she is one of those folks who does from time to time use that awful, awful word. But of course she isn't prejudiced nor bigoted. No. Stand by for a minute. I need to check in on something. I'll be right back. All better now. But there she was, Paula Deen, reminding us that even when that flag, if that flag comes down, there's still a lot of work to be done. And a gentle reminder, when his body lays in state, Clemente Pinckney, senator, assassinated senator from the state of South Carolina, will be lying in state under the coverage of that miserable rag of vicious hatred. You see, the South Carolina legislature set it up like that. They passed their legislation in such a way that even the governor did not have the power to order it moved or lowered or raised. They padlocked it to the top of the pole. They may as well put a banner next to it that says, racism yesterday, racism today, and racism forever. Except that was said by an Alabamian and not a South Carolinian. South Carolinian. Maybe they should have had a quote. From some famous South Carolinian. How about John C. Calhoun? John C. Calhoun whose plantation is now Clemson University. John C. Calhoun said that slavery was not only tolerable, it was a positive good. Maybe they could under their flag. But tempers are a little hot. You see, they have there in downtown Charleston, South Carolina, they have a great big memorial to John C. Calhoun. We could always ask the earnest question as to why you would have a memorial to a man who said that slavery was a positive good, to a man who was trying to foment dissent and secession long before the Civil War even began. He it was who Andrew Jackson may have been thinking about when he said that he would be happy to go to South Carolina and hang the first secessionist he met as high as Haman, I think, to use the biblical allegory that Jackson used. It turns out that the great big giant, I mean, huge memorial to John C. Calhoun, someone has gone and spray-painted in red the word racist under the name Calhoun. And of course, he is a beloved figure. This is everywhere. Calhoun County, bigots and racists named Cal, spray painted racist, and he's got this plaque, you know, with the laurel wreath and the hoopla, and it says to constitution added and. Because it's true, that's what kind of a miserable, god-awful, disgusting, revolting, POS attempt at a member of the human race John C. Calhoun was. Main statue at Garden in Charleston to reflect matter. And why defend this evil? That particular statue was erected in 1932 by the genteel ladies of the Charleston chapter of the United Daughters of the Confederacy, and the name of that statue is Defenders of Charleston, Fort Sumter. By the way, little moment in history here. When Pierre Gustave Toutant Beauregard and the blighted letting loose on that began up we had ago, it should be known that they were not firing on any sort of a threat to Charleston. There were similar forts built in seaports all around the United States. At the mouth of Mobile Bay in the Gulf of Mexico, there are two, and they remain to this day, Fort Gaines and Fort Morgan. Fort Gaines is on Dauphin Island, and Fort Morgan is on Gulf Shores Island. And they aimed at the only entrance into Mobile Bay. The traders successfully took over those two forts and held them until the United States Navy came in and, in fairly short order, knocked them right to hell. Fort Sumter existed not as a gun at Charleston, defensive position against possible invasions by foreigners from ocean. It's quite possible United States soldiers were manning, according to their Fort Sumter, when back when the defenders of Charleston decided to open fire on it. They couldn't have fired back if they'd wanted to. All the guns were pointed in the other direction. It was also painted on that disgusting statue, "This is the root of our evil." Mainly because it is. Now, it's only taken us 100 years to get, but maybe it's time to stop pretending that the people who turned their back on their own nation, took up arms against it, and took the lives of more than 300,000 of their former countrymen were in any wise heroic. Doing a little irony, our friend David in South Carolina provided a little bit. The highway down which Roofie, Dylan Stormroof, the highway down which Roofie traveled on his getaway from the murder scene is a highway that is named after the author of the book upon which the movie, D.W. Griffith's movie, The Birth of a Nation, was based. Yeah, a guy named Dixon, who wrote a book, a heroic book, called The Klansman. Really. See, this filth is all over the South. In the little county where I was born, and in the county across the river from it, and in the county to the east of it, and in the Mississippi County to the west of it, and in the Tennessee County to the north of it, every courthouse, and practically every courthouse in the South, has a statue of a treasonous soldier. And the words CSA. Now, if these things had been put up within, say, the first 5 or 10 years after the cessation of hostilities, maybe it would be a different discussion, but they weren't. Almost uniformly, all of these statutes, all of these flags, all of these emblems are emblems brought to bear, A, as a result of the terrorist insurgency that was waged by Southern white men against emancipated blacks and the reconstruction and occupation of the South, and B, as a means of serving up in-your-face warnings to people of color and anyone who might think about allying with them once Reconstruction had been defeated, once the legal efforts at full citizenship for emancipated black men had been done away with. You only get things like Plessy versus Ferguson and the Jim Crow laws after the terrorist Southern insurgency led by Nathan Bedford Forrest, former Southern cavalry general who was not hanged, had been completed. And so the flag, for instance, and we really can't do anything about this because I guess they were a little bit more subtle there in Alabama. The flag of Alabama is a St. Andrew's cross. White background, red diagonal stripes. It's an homage as opposed to a dead lift from the Confederate flag. It was made official somewhere around 1891, just as the last of the last of Reconstruction and the last hopes for freedom of the emancipated people of color was being ground into dust. Florida's flag, which also is a St. Andrew's cross, is of similar vintage. Not so with the flags of Mississippi Stan and Georgia Stan, though. Those flags were changed to include the Confederate battle flag only after the struggle for civil rights had begun in earnest in the mid-20th century. All of these things, and the same with the statues, all of these things are deliberate attempts on the part of the defeated to make clear to the people who defeated them that they were not going to accept the terms of their surrender. Many people don't know that in the time period leading up to Appomattox Courthouse, a number of delegations had been sent and a number of attempts had been made on the part of the South to say, well, we will happily surrender now. Obviously, you have the better of us now that you have enlisted all of those Negroes in your Yankee army. We will surrender now upon certain conditions. To which Abraham Lincoln and the man whose real name was Hiram Ulysses Grant said, no, the only surrender that will be accepted is an unconditional surrender. That's actually how Grant became known as Ulysses S. Grant, because for publicity purposes, U.S., United States, unconditional surrender Grant, who, through the good offices of William Tecumseh Sherman and others, George Thomas, one of our dear friend, Mr. Stress, Bill Miller's favorite Civil War generals, he paid a real price for what he did, standing. See, George Thomas was a Virginian. George Thomas was a Virginian with a commission in the United States Army, just like Robert E. Lee. But George Thomas understood the implications of oath breaking. And George Thomas chose not to and was forever despised by the people of Old Virginia. For having stood with the country that stood with him. Lee, not so much. Jackson, not so much. But anyway, all of these symbols were enacted as a means of enforcing racism. They were enacted, they were put in place as a bold statement of bigotry. And it is long past time for them to be gone. Long past. And yet, in a few months' time, as noted, the great-great-great-great-great-grandsons and great-great-great-great-great-granddaughters of the same people who signed the ordinance and voted on the ordinance of secession in South Carolina will vote on whether or not to refuse or whether or not to remove that disgusting bloody rag. And it will be a doozy of a debate. Now, I want my good friend to understand that it was no shame for our dear departed colleague Senator Pinckney to be memorialized underneath a flag that represented the enslavement of most of the generations of his family. It was an honor because it is a part of our South Carolina heritage. Will the senator from Bumfuck, South Carolina, please yield? I will happily yield to my good friend, Senator Beauregard Bumbutt. I would merely like to echo my good friend, Senator Jubilation T. Cornpone's remarks. It is a matter of our proud heritage of freedom that we fly that majestic banner to this day, as a reminder that the people of South Carolina are a free people, then, now, and forevermore. And we must not knuckle under to the browbeating and the bullying of a vocal minority who is simply upset because some Negroes got shot. I really want to be wrong about this one. I ain't betting nothing on that I am, though. Will Senator Thumbutt yield? Why, yes, I will happily yield to the senator from Colitis, South Carolina, Ms. Beauregard.
Why, goodness me, I just want everybody to know here that one, that Nikki Haley, she does not speak for me. I know that it is a proud heritage that my great-great-great-great-great-great-grandmother had when she sent the darkies out to bring her the cloth with which she sewed that original proud ensign of freedom that still flies at our capital today.
Because see, here's the fun part. Nimrata Haley did what she did for political purposes and toward political ends because she's term limited from being governor anymore. On the other hand, however, well, all those senators and representatives, all those good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Republicans, family values to the last man and woman. They're beholden to their constituents because they're not going to get to be vice president, and they want to go on being senator and representing for a long, long time. And if they stand up on their little old hind legs and they say that they think that flag should come down, they will become former senators and former representatives, and they will be replaced by someone who will stand half drunk out on the hustings, wrapped in a Confederate battle flag, saying, "Why, those traitorous carpetbaggers, I understand our heritage here in South Carolina, and I will go and defend our heritage, and that flag will never come down." Or if they vote and it comes down, "We will put it back up. And we're going to put it back up over the Capitol, too." Tell me I'm wrong. I want to be wrong about this. I want to think that there is a little bit more decency in South Carolina than I'm willing to bet there is. I want to be wrong, but I ain't going to bet that way. But the conversation, at least, has begun. And by the way, just in case you're wondering, Confederate flag sales are up more than 3,000% on Amazon in the past 24 hours. Thank you, Sparky. Now, here's a question for you. Why is Amazon shipping them? Why is Amazon fulfilling them? Why is Amazon allowing them to be sold through its site? Amazon has said that they're going to stop selling them. They have now. Thank you. Thank you, Beth, for letting me know. Amazon has taken down all Confederate flag-themed items from its site. Regardless, 3,000% jump in sales. Amazon should refuse to ship them. Refund the money. No harm, no foul. Go buy your treason supplies somewhere else, Cletus. Only in America. Wow, interesting. Yeah, the answer, because money. But, by the way, they have not removed all their Confederate flag stuff. Carol just found them. They're on there. Right now. But this does raise a larger issue. And that is this. It's something that I was commenting on over the weekend. Remember a couple of months ago when Indiana passed its gay crow law? And the NCAA said, we will certainly have to rethink our position on whether or not we want to have anything to do with Indiana. And IT companies and all kinds of corporations said, you know, I think maybe we don't need to be having our convention in Indianapolis this year. And then the mayor of Seattle said, we won't be spending any money on travel to Indianapolis. And it snowballed. And all of a sudden, all of those family values defenders, and of course, Mike Pence, with his perfect white helmet hair, crying great crocodile tears, had to bring in a second crocodile, about how this is not a bigotry law. They backed down. Some. They should have just stricken the damn thing off the books, but they amended it to say that it couldn't, well, you know, include discriminating against the homo. Well, something similar needs to take place, and I started tweeting about it, maybe Saturday. Because I thought about the national response to Talibandiana's gay crow law. And that shit got nipped right in the bud, didn't it? Why? Because a lot of people of conscience who weren't even gay, weren't L, weren't G, weren't B, weren't T, weren't Q, weren't QQ, nothing. Just plain old folks. Allied themselves in the name of a better country to bring unbearable pressure on the state government of Talibandiana. Economic pressure. Nobody set off any pipe bombs. Nobody shot at anybody. Economic pressure. Because economic pressure is the only thing that repiglickens and birthers and ninthers and deathers and tenthers and baggers and birchers and booger eaters and libertarians, especially libertarians, understand. You know, Devin just reminded me of something. He said, got a link for the treason rag sale? I need something to wipe with. And, yeah, there's a little piece of advice for Amazon. There is one Confederate battle flag thing you can continue to sell. Continue to sell Confederate battle flag toilet paper. So, understanding that the only thing that a Republican, etc., can comprehend is economic pressure, it is not enough that South Carolina Governor Nimrata Haley has said that the flag should come down. It has to be forced down, economically forced down. You know, you don't really think about it, but there are a lot of corporations, big, wealthy corporations, that do business in South Carolina, Stan. There's that big old BMW factory. No irony there. To the best of my knowledge, BMW is thus far silent on the flag controversy. It's got to come down. There's no controversy. There's no compelling argument to leave it up. But BMW has a corporate conscience. I wonder, now, not fair, I know, but this is one of those moments where I'd almost, well, I do. I'd like to channel the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansas, Stan, for her expertise in business ethics. Because BMW has corporate ethics. I'm sure they have a diversity statement. And as long as they remain silent on the issue of that, and let's remember, this isn't just any Confederate flag. This is the Confederate battle flag. It is the flag one flies in battle against an enemy who happened to be the United States of America. And so it is not just an emblem of that rebellion. It is an emblem that one remains in a state of open hostility. Right? As long as BMW remains silent on the Confederate treason flag flying in South Carolina, they become complicit with it. BMW cannot be heard to say, "We were only keeping our silence so as to stay out of controversy." Because we had a little tribunal that handled that issue. If BMW remains silent about that flag in South Carolina, then it may as well run up the old Hakenkreuz there at the headquarters in Bavaria. I gotcha, I didn't say the word. But they really might as well. And then there's Boeing. Boeing, who went running away from Washington State to set up shop in South Carolina so they could pay people who build airplanes less money. Oh, that's reassuring. Get away from that awful old union. I actually went and read Boeing's statement of diversity. It was a real rib tickler in light of the fact that they've remained silent on the blood-soaked racism flag in South Carolina. Who else? Who else? Westinghouse is in South Carolina in a big way. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the Swedes. Volvo is going to start building cars in South Carolina, just like BMW. So I sent out tweets directed at all of these people, and a few folks even retweeted it, which was kind of nice. But there is a period of time here before the legislature will meet to act on this, and the only way to make sure that Senator Jubilation T. Cornpone doesn't carry the day, and that flag comes down, is for tremendous economic pressure to be brought to bear on that legislature with, shall we say, a heritage and a history of sedition. I'd love to see Bill de Blasio, mayor of New York City, issue a statement saying that, because, you know, I saw somebody, I was Facebooking and tweeting about this all weekend, and somebody who apparently ain't from around here, somebody posted a query. Yeah, that's great. But what business does South Carolina have, and who would ever want to go there? Oh, my. Oh, the tourist dollars that go down to Myrtle Beach and, more importantly, Hilton Head. Oh, my. Millions upon millions upon millions of dollars flow into the South Carolina state coffers every year because people like to go and vacation on the sandy Atlantic shores of that state. And so, if a Bill de Blasio, mayor of New York City, said no tourist dollar, no travel funds will be used by the city of New York for travel to South Carolina until that flag comes down, it would mean something. Sorry, my attention, my concentration was just broken. There's somebody nearby playing with firearms. Nice. They can't help but be shooting within 500 feet of a dwelling, and that's a crime in this state. But it's one of those that doesn't get enforced. Melt the barrel, Daryl. And if, for instance, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo was to sign an executive order saying no state of New York travel dollars would be used for any travel to the state of South Carolina until that flag comes down, that would mean something. Oh, it'd mean a lot. And even though it's a cross-country proposition, let's have the mayor of Seattle do the same thing the mayor of Seattle did during the gay crow debate. And let's have Governor Jerry Brown do the same thing in California, and the mayors of Los Angeles and San Francisco, the mayors of Portland, and Madison, Wisconsin. And let everyday Americans who love their country, who don't sit around pining for the dear old days of slavery and Jim Crow and Knight Riders and strange fruit, let them say personally, not a dime will be spent in South Carolina. Bless his heart, little old Lindsey Graham got out from under the fainting couch long enough to say, now previously, before he figured out which way the politics were blowing, he said, that is a symbol of our heritage, and it has worked for us. But now he's saying it needs to come down too. Because he's all presidential, don't you understand? Mercy! You know, you do have, and I'm not the guy who tells people to go and do stuff. Every now and then I'll ask you to write your senator about the AIC Act or something like that, but that's about the end of it. But if you want to take to the Twitter and say, send a tweet to Rahm Emanuel, at Chicago's mayor, at Rahm Emanuel, or at Bill de Blasio, or at Boeing, or at Volvo Cars US, or at BMW USA, and tell them it's time to figure out which side they're on. I don't think it could hurt anything. And you know what? It just might help. Look at the damage that was done to the oxymoron, Flush Flimball, via the Stop Rush campaign. Yeah, see what I mean? Okay, so a little program note. The stress line number has changed briefly. And you are welcome to chime in with your thoughts. I welcome them. 304-640-8185. 304-640-8185. And we'll talk. Or 304-574-8178. 304-574-8178. We have a matching challenge on the table, anonymously offered. There's $75 out there that would like to have $75 to be its friend. And if the friends come along, then, well, that'll turn into 150 friendly dollars, and we'll be very near to done with fundraising for the evening. Thank you, anonymous contributor. Thank you very kindly. So 304-640-8185 or 304-574-8178 or Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. All of those will get you into the program. We'll take a little break. It being Tuesday, we also have the Green News Report coming up from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. I look forward to every Tuesday and every Thursday when we have the GNR. This is listener-supported conversation radio. And I dare say it's radio unlike any other you're likely to find out there. This is the Horn. And, well, I'm Bob Kincaid.
It's Tuesday, June 23, 2015.
Essentially, what this papal encyclical is suggesting is that every Catholic should vote for the Democrat Party.
Republicans in a bind after the Pope's landmark encyclical on climate change.
This warm blob offshore is potentially a window of things to come.
Record toxic algae bloom shuts down West Coast fisheries. May 2015, the planet's hottest May on record. Plus, the eastern cougar is off the endangered species list. But there's a catch.
As always, a catch. All of those cougars and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Do you agree with the Pope's moral mission on climate change?
Excuse me?
He has every right to have a view on it.
That wasn't the question, Jeb, but good dodge. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, it has been quite enjoyable to watch over the past week since the Pope released his encyclical on climate change. The Republicans, the folks at Fox News, they are tying themselves in knots trying to figure out how to deal with it.
Yes, they are pretty much denying as fast as they can. That's from the Republicans who are running for the 2016 Republican Party presidential nomination.
I think they're running from it, frankly.
Yep, that's probably a better way to put it. A former Florida Governor Jeb Bush, who is a devout Catholic, over the weekend claimed that he loves the Pope, but said the Pope shouldn't wade into political issues, saying, quote, "I don't think we should politicize our faith, and I don't get economic policy from my bishops or my cardinal or my pope."
Well, then I wonder who he's going to get his climate policy from, since these guys seem uninterested in listening to, you know, the actual scientists.
And on NBC's Meet the Press, former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee went straight to denying the global scientific consensus and threw in some 1970s Ice Age myth for good measure.
Yeah, some nonsense.
Whether it's man-made or not, I know that when I was in college, I was being taught that if we didn't act very quickly, that we were going to be entering a global freezing.
That's not true.
And, you know, go back and look at the covers of Time and Newsweek from the early 70s.
I've seen them.
And we were told that if we didn't do something by 1980, we'd be popsicles.
No, we weren't.
Now we're told that, you know, we're all burning up.
Not true.
Science is not as settled on that as it is on some things.
Basically, all he has is a myth to try to counter what the science actually says.
The myth being that in the 70s, all of the scientists were warning that we were heading into an ice age. That's not true. There was a tiny percentage of scientists who felt that might be the case. The vast majority were warning then and are still warning now about global warming.
Meanwhile, in the race for the Democratic Party presidential nomination, former Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley responded to the Pope's encyclical by declaring that if he is elected president, his first priority will be setting the U.S. on a path to phase out fossil fuels by 2050, with the goal of transitioning the U.S. to entirely 100% clean energy in 35 years.
100% clean energy by 2050 for the U.S.?
That would be his goal.
That's Martin O'Malley?
Yep.
I like it.
Meanwhile, the planet continues to ignore politics, with 2015 blowing past every other year in terms of global temperatures. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration has announced that May 2015 was the hottest May ever recorded for the planet. It was also the hottest spring ever recorded on the planet, and we've just had the hottest January to June ever recorded on the planet by far.
Breaking lots of records, but let's not notice that, Governors Huckabee and Bush.
And a lot of that warming is going into the ocean, and scientists believe that might be the cause behind a record toxic algae bloom that has forced officials to close commercial crab and shellfish fisheries along the West Coast from California to Washington. In an interview with KUOW in Seattle, toxic algae expert Vera Trainer says commercially caught shellfish is not dangerous to consumers, but unfortunately, wildlife is not so lucky. She says this may be a window into our future.
We're trying to find out if this is a scenario this year that's going to give us a taste of what is to come. And what's particularly worrisome is that we're not only seeing this one type of algal bloom, but two other types of algal blooms.
In other words, the scientists are seeing multiple simultaneous outbreaks of toxic algae blooms, and that's really weird.
Once again, nothing to see here, governors.
Finally, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service says it's time to take the Eastern American cougar off the endangered species list. It used to roam from Canada to South Carolina, and it's coming off the list not because its population has rebounded. Managers at the Fish and Wildlife Service say the Eastern cougar should be taken off the list because it is extinct and no longer warrants federal Endangered Species Act protections.
Well, that's horribly sad.
I'm so sorry, but it's true.
Now I can't even make my cougar jokes. Thanks for nothing, Desi Doyen. For much more on that and all of the other stories we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone?
Ooh, that was kind of a cold close, wasn't it? But, yeah, it's true. This is The Horn, 21 minutes after 7 p.m. in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. I'm Bob Kincaid, and it is in fact, Titanic Tuesday, although I didn't make much mention of it. Although an entire nation being conned by Nimrata Haley, look at her, she's so open-minded, sort of screams out Titanic Tuesday, doesn't it? Let's run over to the stress line. We might actually, I think I may have conjured her. Are you there, Diane?
You did conjure me, Bob, although I'm not entirely clear about the reason, because I got home just a few minutes ago, and I heard you conjure me because I tuned in on TuneIn Radio. And so could you pose the question, does it have to do with whether I think the corporations in South Carolina should lobby the government there?
That's pretty much the heart and essence of it. I mean, it's the question of how one can maintain any sort of fidelity to a statement of diversity or principles of diversity at the same time that one quietly tolerates, you know, a treason flag flying in the state where you're doing business.
Yeah. My reply made it seem incoherent.
I doubt it.
Well, I will just paint a picture of my background just briefly. I mean, I am a business ethicist, and I am trained in the PhD program I was at in Pitt. It was ethics, corporate social responsibility, and strategic management and business government and society. So I find myself in sort of an unusual niche in that I look inside the corporation at what corporations are doing, and then teach about the role of corporations in society, like business, government, and society. And the reason I have led with that is one reason I can give you is that many executives could say that we are following diversity because we have certain human resource management hiring practices and retention policies. So, and I know that's not what you're asking, but that's one of the first places I would look to see how they're handling diversity. And then if I look more on the boundary, you know, the interface between the corporation society, well, in this case, the state, which is where you're taking me, then to me, it's a dicier matter. And that is because we are asking that question, and only an academic would say this, I guess, but we are asking that question because public policy has failed. Okay? As in my field, which spans ethics, economics, strategic management, business government, you know, public policy, where I am, am, is corporations should not even have enough power for this lobbying. You know, and corporations, businesses are the major purveyor, if that's the right word, of those PACs, you know, the political.
Oh, sure. And Diane, I agree with you entirely, completely,
yeah.
that corporations should keep their nose out of business. But at this particular point in time,
yeah,
that ain't the case.
Okay, so having said that, I mean, the only reason I'm mentioning that is because if we want them to apply pressure in this area, and I'll get back to that, but what comes with it, practically speaking, and at this point in time in reality, in time and space, you know, leave the academic space aside, but in the practical level, what comes with that is that then when, you know, right-to-work issues come up or other issues where they don't want to pay taxes or whatever, then they will exert the same pressure, and that will come with it. I mean, that's the whole ball of wax. So taking it issue by issue, I would have a couple of questions. Like, ideally, if corporations applied pressure, we would, in this regard, to get that flag taken down, which, trust me, where I personally live and breathe, I can't even stand to think of that flag. I can't even stand to look at it. But if
imagine me who every morning when I walk outside my house, all I got to do is look to my right, and my next door neighbor has one hanging by the road.
God, do you have a match or no? yeah. Well, the thing is, you know, as an ethicist and deontologist, the deontologist in me, which is more the Immanuel Kant, the duty, the respect for life, you know, that thread of the ethics tradition, of course. I want a certain outcome here. If a corporation moves in and applies pressure, and you're right to ask about it because practically speaking, that seems to catch the attention of these fascistic people that we put in office. You know, apparently...
Well, and I mean, the whole reason I got started thinking about it, Diane, is because, you know, the Republican legislature in Talibandiana got real busy real quick as soon as it looked like there were a bunch of corporations saying that the money was leaving.
And that's why my answer is not as quick and perhaps as coherent as I would like it to be and perhaps you would want it to be, is because that is pathetic. That's pathetic because they had people spilling out into the streets already at the Capitol site protesting. And so it's but here's the thing. There are pressures that have been brought to bear by, one of the main social activist groups, believe it or not, churches move very quickly on some human rights issues and apartheid issues. The last century, churches, very large activist groups. If we're going to expect that of corporations, and some corporations are falling through, well, we like to see, those of us that follow this, we like to see them act on a mission state. We don't want it to come out of the blue. We want it more lasting than this issue or that issue. We would like to see the respect for life embedded in their mission statement, their value statement, their selection. Well, board members are technically voted on, but that their board members.
Because that's kind of a rigged.
Yeah, it is rigged. So that the board members are quote voted on, you know, that the selection of the board members are based on their alignment with the corporate value system, and you get what I'm talking about. And so that the pressure doesn't come out of the blue as disconnected to how they've acted in the past and how the corporation managers will act in the future. You see what I mean?
I do.
So if you told me the name of a corporation that was acting, and I recognized that this was consistent with how the corporate managers have behaved in the past, and their board of directors have behaved, and the issues they've supported, and where they've strategic philanthropy is a huge deal and has been for quite a while. So, and that I saw that the corporation was acting consistently according to its values with how, you know, where their philanthropy was going to what parts of society. Then I would think, oh, well, good. They have added this to an already consistent pattern. To come out of the blue from perhaps a corporation that still thinks, that still has Germany as their home country. I don't know how the charter is set up here, quite frankly. I don't know. I guess they have a subsidiary here with a corporate charter here. I don't really know. But, you know, it causes me to pause and think, well, that's a little bit of a mess. That's a voice that, where's it coming from? I mean, are they just calculating that X number of consumers will be unhappy? I don't know where the intention is, but sure, I would hope that they would stop and think about what happened and recording.
Exactly. And of course, as I expected, you're making far more sense than I would be capable of doing if I went on at this for 6 hours.
I don't know.
No, I do. I can say that with real confidence, Diane. Let's do a little case study.
Uh-huh.
I have in front of me here, now, you know, Boeing went to South Carolina. And there was a lot of unhappiness about it because a lot of people with good union jobs got robbed and otherwise, for lack of a better term, screwed.
By
Boeing.
South Carolina.
By Boeing. It's because Boeing was tired of paying those what do we call it here in West Virginia? Unfairly high wages. So Boeing, nonetheless, and they've got a diversity statement.
Uh-huh.
I've got it here in front of me.
Uh-huh.
If I may share.
Please.
Diversity.
They left Wichita, Bob.
Right. Isn't that where they left Wichita for, South Carolina?
I thought they left Wichita the year I'm thinking of, which wasn't that long ago, for Washington. But here's what I'm going to mention this briefly because it kind of fits tangentially into what we're talking about. They left Wichita after getting Kansas state legislators to introduce public policy on their behalf. So you see why I pause. And they do that, and it's a matter of record. They do that. They influence public policy here to their benefit. And then right after getting the legislators here to do their bidding, they up and left, like right away.
Yeah.
Making everyone here feel betrayed.
Did they leave with money in their pockets?
I don't know about that. But they influence some public policy outcomes, tax, you know, easements, infrastructure. I don't remember the details. I remember doing a press release on it, and being asked about it. And when I was asked about it, I went and did some research, which I don't remember the details now of what I read. But I was the only one in the press raising the issue. I said, I suspect there's union busting goals here. And you know, I didn't see anyone else bringing that up. So that's why I pause when I think of corporations.
Well, and I do, and I do too. But I just, I got to looking at just the short list, and the list is actually much longer. But the short list of some pretty heavy hitters doing business down there. Boeing, BMW, Volvo is about to build a huge plant, Westinghouse, and, you know, there's more.
And Boeing, you already mentioned Boeing.
Yeah, Boeing, right. Yeah. So here's Boeing's Here's Boeing's diversity statement. Diversity and inclusion are part of Boeing's values at the highest level. Having diverse employees, business partners, and community relationships is vital to creating advanced aerospace products and services for our diverse customers around the world. The company's commitment to diversity means providing a work environment for all employees that is welcoming, respectful, and engaging, with opportunities for personal and professional development. This, in turn, increases productivity, quality, creativity, and innovation. Boeing has a formal company-wide diversity strategy, mission, and goals, which guide a variety of internal programs and events. Our business excellence reaches new heights every day, powered by Boeing people.
Right. And as I listen to you, do you know how much of that statement, which is good, that's a well-crafted statement, do you know how much of that statement I heard as referring to their internal environment?
No, tell me.
Most, 80%. I heard community relations mentioned early on, community relations, which is as close as they get to something we're talking about here, actually.
Yes, and in fact, community relationships leapt off the page at me.
Yeah.
Because you know, having a good community relationship, well, I mean, there are companies out there in the past that have had good community relationships with the local government. I think of companies like IG Farben and Tyson Industries and Krupp and Brown. They had great community relationships.
But when you say community, you mean local community relationships?
Well, no, I mean, that was the state. I mean, maybe Boeing means just, you know, right there where the plant is.
Yeah, I mean, community relations, to a lot of them, it sometimes boils down to their local community or regional community. Actually, I met with the director of Boeing several times because she used to come to our advisory board meeting, and because ethics compliance was in her neck of the woods, you know, she would send me some internal documents that she could share that were not proprietary that had to do with how many times she met with employees on compliance and ethics that went beyond compliance. So, you know, it's just so it's difficult to know. See, when once we get out into this policy arena and state arena, it's just dicier because diversity often means they come to the university and they recruit from our student body people who are considered to be of color, and they watch for gender balances too. But what would prompt them from that statement? What would guide them from that statement with dealing with, you know, the state on this issue? I would want the board of directors. Like, I know of one company, because I work with a law partner at Jones Day. I bring him in, and I ask him to do research on certain things for me, which he gladly does. He's a former, long, long time ago, he was a student. Before I went to law school, I had him as a student. And, you know, he worked with boards of directors globally. And he talks about it. I bring him to university audiences. I bring him to my classroom. He's one of these, bless him. he's a law partner, Jones Day, who I guess he earns $800 an hour at least. I don't know.
Right.
And he works with boards of directors all over the world. He got his degree from University of Virginia Law School after leaving K-State undergrad. And, you know, he's giving back. So he comes pro bono twice a year and does what I ask him to do. It's like, as a side note, after he got law partner, he said, I'm willing to come give back. I can give back to your classes or offer UVA And I'm like, oh, stop. come on. So he talks about working with boards of directors when they have, and some of them have such a detailed code of ethics that, and some of them ignore the, Enron set aside their code, the Enron board set aside the code of ethics to do what they were going to do with special purpose entities and lack of transparency. But there are examples of boards, he's worked with them, when they get this kind of issue in front of them, they get out an 80-page ethics code and go through it to see guidance on this issue. And it affects the outcome of how the board votes. I'm not saying this is universal. I'm saying I know that some boards work this way because of some affiliations I have with CEOs and this law partner. And only an academic would bring this up instead of making a snap judgment, but I have to say I would prefer that it function that way, that this issue comes up and the board, because they meet on such issues, and have this lawyer from Jones State, things to do is, he works with patent law, he works on many things, but he works with boards on their codes of ethics. So, one would like to see a history established there where they already have a history of help with these issues, and they have detailed guidance, code of ethics being much different than just a mission statement that helps them know what to do, what they're empowered to do on behalf of stockholders.
Right. Concreteness, in other words.
Yeah, and precedent. It's not like stare decisis, but, precedent, that they are doing what's congruent with past actions, even if they're extending, even if they're going further. But sure, if I was just to give a short answer on the side of human dignity and respect for others and, to advance the condition of people who have not been treated fairly, I would hope that corporations would do what many are doing, picking up the phone and calling the governor. So I don't know. It would be fascinating to hear these.
Well, and that's why I conjured you, Diane, because I look at things. You look at things through the lens of your expertise, and I look at it through a different lens entirely. And it certainly doesn't qualify as expertise. My thinking on this was, especially when I went and read their statement. If you're going to have internal diversity and be welcoming of a diverse community of employees, what is that worth if the minute they walk out the door and off the property, they go back into a sea of barely hidden racism or bigotry or prejudice or along those lines? And so I got to, because I guess kind of organizing is in my heart, I got to thinking that if people would reach out and tell Boeing that this matters to them, that Boeing then might in turn talk to the legislature. Because, see, one of the problems, and part of the genesis of this, and you get a lot more idea of how my mind works, this discussion is that, a year or maybe two ago now, the governor of South Carolina, Nimrata Haley, announced that she had no problem with the Confederate flag, the Confederate battle flag, because no business leaders had complained to her about it.
I heard that. So,
that told me that business leaders need to complain about it to her. And never mind to her, she never had any power to deal with it in the first place. It is somewhat unique that the legislature would maintain control over a flag. Okay.
What do they need? A two-thirds vote?
They need a two-thirds vote in both houses.
Oh, wow.
Now, even with something fairly mundane, I'm pretty sure that the South Carolina legislature can't get a two-thirds majority in both houses on which is better, shrimp and grits or barbecue.
Oh, God, yeah.
Hell, they might come to blows over that, Diane.
Yeah.
But for that reason, it seemed like because I have no confidence at all that left to its own devices that legislature would do the right thing. And I say truly because I mean I believe this all the way to the core of my being. The only thing a Republican, a conservative, understands is economic force.
Yeah.
I mean, Sherman burnt the place to the ground. They were ready to eat dirt to keep from surrendering, but the fact of the matter was there was a blockade and the cotton was rotten on the docks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I personally hope they get huge pushback from the business community. But, you know, as I say that, my heart sinks because that means one CEO or public affairs manager or chair of the board, I don't know who's handling these phone calls, that means one call from that person, official, is worth more than, I don't know, 100,000 of our votes. I mean, I just...
Right,
it
really is. I mean, this is the ultimate outcome of corporations are people to my friend.
Yeah.
Remember when Willard said that? Well,
corporations are people, the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Well.
And then Willard followed it up when somebody challenged him on it and said, "Well, corporations are people too, my friend."
Oh, that was wasn't that Mitt Romney?
Yeah, that was Willard.
She just said, "Oh, yeah, well." You know,
and so if who's this guy? Let me see. I got his picture here. Jim McNerney is chairman and CEO of Boeing. And I'm pretty sure that if Jim McNerney picks up the phone and dials down to the, let's say, majority leader's office of the South Carolina Senate and says, "Bubba, this is Jim. You know, Boeing, Jim, yeah, flag's got to go." Because you know that Boeing's greased the palms of practically everybody in that body.
Yeah, and you know what? Not only that, but if anyone's paying attention, they know that the state of Kansas went along with Boeing and Boeing up and left. So they're dealing with the corporation that might just do that again.
Well, exactly, and that's the whole point. You know,
they've demonstrated it lately.
Bubba, have you ever seen how long it takes to move a plant to China? Son, it don't take long at all.
I just hate it that the corporations have this much power. I really always ascribe to John Kenneth Galbraith's notion of countervailing power. And when I don't see countervailing power, these discussions make me uncomfortable.
Well, they do me too, but I live in a world, Diane, of real politics.
Oh, yeah.
And if it's going to be this way, we might as well use what little bit of power we have to make their power work for us.
Now, the thing is, and I would hope that anyone making the calls or whatever discussions are going on, hopefully on the level of the board, that these people are fully informed about the history. And, you know, that it's just not coming out of some kind of calculus. But not only is it consistent with a mission statement and their statement of values, but that they actually didn't just move to South Carolina and have no understanding of the history. I just would hope it's real.
Well, the fact that they moved to South Carolina is indicia of the fact, it's prima facie indicia of the fact that they understood the history. They went to South Carolina for right to work and cheap labor.
Oh, no, not that history, of course. They understand the right to work stuff. But I mean, of the history of racial tensions and, you know, like the background of the people who were in that church and the background of that church itself. I mean, one would just hope that a response would come out of a deep understanding of where they are. And I don't mean just the workers' rights issue. I mean of the people.
I do too, because maybe I should have overtly stated the background of what I was asserting, and that is that it is the known history of right to work is an attempt by the South to make sure that people of color could never unionize.
Yeah, that's right.
It's all of a piece with the same culture of oppression.
Yeah. Well, hopefully they know that much. I mean, I don't know that everyone does. I've heard you talk about that, and it's become clear to me that many, many of our laws are backhanded, you know, originated with a racist attitudes. But hopefully, you know, people coming from Germany coming in, I just hope they would understand the nuances. But, you know, setting all that aside, if they're the only people that the government, the policymakers in South Carolina will listen to, you know, I hope they do put pressure to bear. Because
my position, Diane, is that the only way they will is if they themselves are pressured.
The corporations?
Yes. I mean, somebody has to tell them it's the right thing to do.
I don't know that for sure. I think in some instances that's probably true.
Look at the number of corporations who dumped Rush Limbaugh because of the number of people who were tweeting at them and Facebooking and writing and calling saying, you know, I won't do business with you as long as you do business with him.
Yeah, I'm thinking, though, and so in some situations I think that's true, but in situations where the response seems quicker, and I'm thinking of Indiana, it might be more what you said before in this conversation that what's the use in having good diversity programs and settling in a community where the minute your employees walk out the door, they're treated like second-class citizens? So I think the response to the governor of Indiana from eBay and I don't remember the corporations or the public officials who said we won't be having conventions in your city. But more to the point, I think some of the response from business as to whether they would think of Indiana for a corporate headquarters is because it would be so contrary to their internally established work climate policy. So I don't know. I think in some instances the policy and the mission and the sentiment and the climate, it might be so firmly established in a corporation that when they pressure government, I see continuity there. And then I think that, oh, this decision is sound because it's probably happening because of a lot of internal discussions and policy changes and hiring practices, and there's been continuity of CEO succession, and I think, oh, there's a quick response here because this is who they are. And then I'm like, oh, okay, well, I don't overthink that one.
No, and the other part of this piece is that there's a big difference between calling a corporation and saying, hello, Starbucks, I will never buy another cup of coffee from you, and I'm going to tell my friends not to, because everybody buys coffee. Everybody doesn't buy a Boeing jet.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But these corporations do like to have shiny, pristine public images, right? I mean,
as important to some as others.
And granted, this is a separate case because it does require public participation. But I don't know. You probably don't watch much TV. I watch very little too. But I happen to have seen and it just reeks of desperation and fear, and I love it. The ads that SeaWorld is running. We're SeaWorld. We love our animals. We love our animals at SeaWorld more than anybody else in the world loves our animals because we know you love our animals. And we really do treat them decently. I mean, granted, they don't have an entire ocean to swim around in, and they go kind of insane after a while and occasionally eat one of our trainers. But we love our animals. And then it ends with a website, get the facts from SeaWorld or something. And I'm sitting there going, wow, you guys must really be hurting.
Well, and you've made your earlier point. I mean, they're closer to the consumer than Boeing.
Right.
So, you see, the consumer values and pressures matter, but with Boeing, that's one reason I question, well, where is this coming from?
Right, but that, by the same token, is a different story for, say, BMW and Volvo. They do have a close association with the consumer.
Right.
I think that SUV
income,
that's the thing. I think that SUV that they manufacture in South Carolina is on a price point competitively with most of the other big SUVs out there, such that, you know, there's a bunch of them on the road. So if people say, you know, I'm getting ready to buy a car, but it ain't going to be a BMW until you tell them to take down that flag, that has meaning.
Yeah, but here again, I get in a situation. Here's where I pause again, because I'm just beginning to understand how racist a lot of people in this country are. So leaving this to a corporation to align with consumer values when a lot of consumers are, who knows how they come out on this issue.
No, and that's the Chick-fil-A.
See, that's
the Chick-fil-A part of this. Remember when everybody, when it turned out that Chick-fil-A was a gang of homophobes? And then, you know, lo and behold, there's Sarah Palin and Mike Huckabee and, of course, the Duggars gloriously munching on their Chick-fil-A's. Or heck, even the $800,000 that was raised by a crowdfunding campaign for Memories Pizza because they stood up for their Christian values and said they would never serve no pizzas to no homo wedding reception.
Well, and
it's a double-edged sword. There's no getting around it.
Yeah, that's it. And, I mean, I'm going beyond that in my mind because we have a new Chick-fil-A place in town, and it's sometimes the lines are – I never go in places like that. I don't eat fast food at all. But it's heavily attended, and there are lines. And I don't know because I haven't done any surveys, but I don't know how many people – in this town are avoiding them for any reason. And more to the point, I don't know how many people who go in there are going in thinking, and I like their food, and I like their stand on, you know, the gay issue, and that they're Christians. I mean, we might find an astonishingly high number of consumers in that latter camp.
Well, yeah, and we can't expect everybody. I'm a weirdo, and I admit it, and I acknowledge it. I consider my consumer acts to be acts of morals and ethics in large part.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Wherever I possibly can. So, for instance, if I pull up to a business and it has a Friends of Cole sticker on it,
yeah,
I keep going.
Yep. I'm the same way.
Although sometimes I actually go in and say, we were about to drop $100 in here, but I couldn't help noticing your Friends of Coal sticker, so we're going to go somewhere that doesn't have one of those.
Better. I mean, it's the one rule we have left in this society where it can matter what we think. It can matter that we're not shopping at a certain store and we let people know why, but that goes back to the place needing to be close to the consumer. I'm a different person when I'm a consumer at times, and this is a little bit of a side note, but I do edit myself usually when I walk around, in terms of what I do and where I speak and blah, blah, blah. But as a consumer, like, I walked into Radio Shack a few years ago because if I got 50 miles close to Topeka from any angle, my Sirius left radio station, satellite radio, Sirius XM, got drowned out by some Christian statement, must have been 70,000 watts or something, you know? So I walked into Radio Shack and I said, I've got Sirius XM satellite radio, and I need to jerry-rig that system so when I get 60 miles close to Topeka, I don't hear that goddamn Christian station. And I said it just like that because, you know, this has nothing to do really
with it. And then the Radio Shack clerk fainted.
No, the Radio Shack said for $7, there's this, you know, line that you can just put one end into your podcast port in your car and the other end goes into this place on the back. Oh, he went out to the car and put it in for me, and I've never heard that Christian station again. I'm just saying that being a consumer is the one place left in this society, I think, that sometimes in some situations, and that was a bad example I just gave you. I gave it to you because I don't edit myself when I'm a consumer, you know? This is what I want. Here's the money. I don't care what you think about my preference, you know? Or I do care what you think about my preference. To me, it's a fairly clean role where there might be a difference made. You know, I'm like you. I wait for my car to be repaired, and Fox News is on, you know, in the weight room, and I go up, and I'm usually nice, and I don't know. I was just so mad at that Christian station. I used profanity in the Radio Shack. This kid didn't care, which is very gratifying. He didn't care. He fixed it for me, and I thanked him, and he might have even agreed
you
with
interrupted
me.
You interrupted the usual ennui of his day, Diane.
These young kids, they don't really care, I don't think.
No, he was probably grateful.
Might have been, but, you know, to me, it was, I was going to spend money there, and I was going to say why in my own way, and then waiting for my car to be repaired, and at Honda, you know, they have a big thing about service and making you comfortable and carting you around town. I mean, I think Honda has their service function just really fine-tuned. I really like having my car serviced at Honda. And I'm like, you know, I'm not happy with Fox on. You know, and I said, I bet in this crowd there'll be half who are happy and half who are not, because it's a university town. We can surmise that not everyone's going to be happy with Fox. Now I go in, and they have this home decorating channel on all the time. I mean, but I don't even like home decorating stuff, and I don't know about the soldiers from Fort Riley sitting there watching it. But you know, I mean, I just think it's just fine to assert oneself when there's money on the table and be real about it. But that's
yeah, I know. But you just ruined me with that aside, because now I can just see, Sergeant, I didn't even know you could do that with a tea light.
No, I mean, I'm sitting there. Soldiers are coming in all the time. It's a mixed thing here, you know, in Manhattan, the university, Fort Riley. Fort Riley apparently is going kind of crazy. I'm hearing from secondhand There's something about Jade Helm, and I know this is off topic.
Oh, no. It's spreading.
There are lines to get into Fort Riley. Even people they've employed, they have their securities all heightened. They're pointing their firearms at people who are... I mean, I'm not saying anything... what I'm hearing is sort of... I don't know what's going on. I guess that's what I want to say. I'm hearing outlandish things about long lines for employees to actually get into Fort Riley and, you know, people guarding the spots of entry are armed to the teeth all of a sudden. So I don't know what's going on at Fort Riley. I don't know what any of that's about. But I've taken us off topic. Excuse me. I don't know why my mind has to go from one. I don't know why my mind has to go from South Carolina and end up in Radio Shack and then in Fort Riley. I do not think that's coherent. I don't know why.
But it makes its own version of perfect sense, Diane, because this is all of a piece. Something I said last week. There is. And you don't have to be just, you know, running naked in the yard crazy to draw a line between, say, the massacre in Charleston and the Pope's encyclical on climate change. You don't, because there's a common thread of humanity that runs through both. And
yeah.
and this is a nervous, like a dog trying to pass a peach pit, shaking nation. There's a story out there out of North Carolina today about a teenage kid who was getting a little sideways, who got taken down by the FBI for being sympathetic to ISIS because his parents caught him setting fire to Buddha statues.
What?
And they were afraid he was going to burn down the house. So
well, that's the logical fear.
So they called 911, and 911 called the FBI.
Oh, God.
And now the FBI with their, you know, with their van and their guns and their black uniforms and come out with your hands up. You know, because we are a nation that has so long brutalized the rest of the world that we're afraid that the world may be catching up. That's my theory.
I wonder, yeah, all the while we have, you know, the capital in the middle of the country. You can't get 50 miles near it without some Christian just blaring. Well, I fix, you know, that guy at Radio Shack for $7. I've never had another. You know, my son just visited me from Rochester, and it was a treat to have him here. He saw my mother, you know, and that was the whole point, really. But he arrives at my house, and he goes, oh, my God, this part of the country. I said, what? It's hot. It's hot, isn't it? He goes, oh, no, it's just, he said, oh, God. And I said, what is it? He goes, the whole radio spectrum is full of right wing. I said, oh, well, Chris, yeah. He goes, well, not in New York. He says, the whole radio spectrum is not full of right wing. This is oppressive. And I said, Chris, I never hear. I mean, I've got Sirius satellite radio on the left channel and never move it, so. You know, and I'm here in a university town, so while I will move to Rochester at some point, I know I will, you know, there are these oases, and he knows that. And one reason he knows that is on Sunday, I took him, there was a wedding on campus. Our associate provost, who's a really good friend, he used to be my department head, is married this woman from India, who's our next mayor. She's our next mayor.
Oh, wow.
She has a red spot between her eyes and everything, you know. And it was it was in Danforth All Faith Chapel on campus. And when we walked in, I said, Chris, isn't it? And I was honored to be invited. There was a mix of town people and their academic friends. So it was a nice mix. And I said, Chris, isn't it interesting that because we see the label All Faith Chapel, that this structure is completely devoid of any symbolism? I mean, there wasn't a picture on the wall. There wasn't a saint anywhere. It was like a Frank Lloyd Wright design you know, place. Just spare, but pretty, but nice. Clean lines and all that, and a big organ, but it was, so then, you know, it's 2 hours of this wedding under a canopy with, and some kind of Indian priest saying a lot of, just a lot of, a mix of rituals from India, and I recognize some of them.
You know, we could just file this all under religion and say, A bunch of religious people saying incomprehensible things.
Well, yeah, but you know, I recognize some of the words because of all the time I spent in the ashram in the Catskill Mountains and Sanskrit and all that. So in the tradition of arati, like taking a tray and there's a candle on it and making a circle. I mean, I recognize some things, but it was so funny because this Indian priest, whoever he was, you know, was saying all this stuff, and it went on an hour and a half, and we're all sitting there watching this ritual, and then
are you telling me it was longer than a Catholic wedding?
Huh? Yes, that's what my son said. That's exactly what he said. He was a good sport about it. He's an atheist, you know, but
I mean, yeah, because that's kind of the benchmark standard of long weddings, right?
Yeah, that's what he said. And
sit,
so,
stand, kneel, sit, stand, kneel.
But I know this couple. I go out to eat with them, and one thing is, I'm like, Chris, you see this ceremony. Our associate provost is marrying an Indian woman who's our next mayor because she got the most votes on when she ran for city commissioner. So I'm like, this is a little bit different than maybe you think of Midwest cities. And oh, he got it. But as the Indian person, man who was blaring these words, some I recognize, some in Sanskrit, out into the audience, and we were all sitting there. I was enjoying it because it was a beautiful ritual, and it was a mix of stuff. There was something from Corinthians read by this black minister woman. You know, I don't know, it was just it was just interesting, all faith, and then we had this kind of potpourri of rituals going on, and at some point he's blaring into the audience, you know, how Hindu Abhishek, Mississippi, Oklahoma, and the name of three states come out, and boy did we in the audience kind of perk up, like, why is Mississippi coming up in this soliloquy thing that this
I recognize something. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and we just kind of, and the Indian people from India sitting in front of me, they were looking at each other. It had its moments. And, you know, this, it's just a mixed thing here, and it kind of works. Because,
well, that's the way it's supposed to be like that. Everybody
exactly.
can be welcome, everybody can be comfortable. Nobody, you know, nobody brings their Confederate flag.
Oh, God.
You know what I mean? I mean, that is the way this country is supposed to work. You know, if we have to go off in our little tribal groups and do our little tribal things, that's okay. But we can all come together when need be, and everybody's okay. Unfortunately, this country mostly doesn't work like that. And I know from our previous conversations, Diane, that you know that. I mean, you recognize the fact that you live in a little oasis.
Oh yeah, I think I might have mentioned to you when I walk in the park, this big park in the middle of the city, and I walk by the pavilion, and I walk by three baseball fields, two tennis courts, a toddler's park, swimming pool area, blah, 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 you know, the Rose Garden. And
see, I've become so jaded, Diane, that when I see something like that, something marvelous, a beautiful public space like that, you know what the first thing that goes through my mind is? Somewhere out there, there's a libertarian, a Coke aficionado, maybe a Coke himself, who thinks that needs to be privatized and a corporation needs to be making a profit from it.
Well, it's not gonna.
Tell me
happen.
I'm wrong. I mean, am I?
Well, no, because it does happen. But I'm living in a bubble where we just got a new ice skating pavilion there, endowed by the former president of Kansas State. I mean, when I go into the Rose Garden, it's in memoriam. from, you know, a family who was naming it for their beloved son. I mean, this park ain't going into any corporate hands.
Well, no, it won't, because but the thing is,
no.
in lots of other places in the country, it can, it will, and it does.
That's heartbreaking. And, you know, but the thing is, going to what you said about how the country should function, think of it. I'm in the middle of the Bible Belt, and the All-Faith Chapel on campus, because it says All-Faith, you walk in, and there's no faith. I mean, really, it's...
Yeah, bring it with you. Right. Bring it with you.
There's no pictures. There's no stains on the wall. It's just stripped down so that anyone can be comfortable.
It's happening right there in the middle of the country. And if I have made one mistake, and I've made many, but if I'm making one mistake in regard to the whole South Carolina discussion, it is that I'm running the risk of making people think that the entire state of South Carolina is a bunch of mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking Klansmen freaks. They aren't. Okay, like any other state, there's a progressive community there of decent people. Unfortunately, I am convinced that they are broadly outnumbered. And you know, it remains to be seen, and that's why I wanted to come up with some sort of a national idea that people all over the country could get involved in. To wit, putting pressure on these corporations and other, you know, and state governments. You know, it would be kind of cool if the governor of Minnesota would say no Minnesota state dollars will be used for travel to the state of South Carolina until the flag comes down. That is a big and symbolic statement.
I'm all for it. But I mean, as a business ethics professor, like in front of the classroom, it's not like I shy away from moral issues, but to speak clearly on that, I'd be saying to my students, I buy into all the other levers of corporate influence that are available, you know, to corporations. I mean, I would put on myself explaining myself, if you understand.
No, I do understand. Oh, by the
role of corporations in society is not one I take lightly when I teach. I do want to be coherent on it, about it, but in terms of people power and as a citizen, I'm all for anything that people can do to pressure for a more decent society in line with this nation's espoused values, supposed.
Right. Well, supposed. Big supposed. This is one of the lovely parts of any conversation here at the Horn. You have triggered a memory in another member of the Horn community. Robert writes in from Australia. I did an Indian wedding once for a while. I shot wedding videos, parenthetically, never again. And Robert says, I did an Indian wedding. I was told it would be 45 minutes long by the bride and groom. 2.5 hours later, after the sun had set behind them, the ceremony ended. Eggs in a bowl, a bamboo stick, and walking in circles are a few of my memories of it. I must dig out my backup copy and check it out. Long, but a nice wedding. Hey, Diane, it has been a lovely conversation. Thank you for letting me conjure you.
Yeah, thank you for conjuring me, and have a good night, Bob.
All right, you take care, Diane.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. The marvelously coherent Diane in Kansas, Stan. Even when she thinks she is not being coherent, she can't help it. Let's continue onward. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Yeah, Sandra.
Hey.
Welcome. What's happening? How you been?
Oh, you know, just busy, but I just thought I'd call in, you know, to catch up, and I don't even know where to start.
I know.
It's so out of control.
Well, it feels, that's what I was talking to Diane about. It feels like this country is teetering on the edge of something.
Yeah, well, you know, the whole sort of, you know, let's pull the flag down so we can run for president because that's how I look at it.
Well,
so that woman is too dumb to Nikki over in South Carolina.
Yeah,
she don't.
We like to call
somebody
her.
Somebody told her.
Yeah, we like to call her by her real name. You know, Nimrata. Yeah.
Oh,
Nikki,
okay.
Yeah, Nikki,
like
my
Piyush.
Yeah. Piyush, Nimrata. Yeah. I mean, if we got, the right wing wants to call, you know, Barack Hussein Obama, sauce goose,
no,
sauce gander, right?
She's too stupid to come to a realization. Somebody called her up.
Oh, yeah. Well, they really did. I mean, the fact that, you know, you see that photograph there, Sandra, and you know, Rince Priebus watching her. You know, Rince Priebus doesn't come along every time some governor or some southern states makes an announcement about the Confederate flag. Rince comes along when there's ring kissing to be done.
Yeah, well, no, but it's just the thing is just so, I mean, it's all so horrific because they're trying to balance some way of maintaining the Confederate flag in the face of some idiot shooting 9 black people. You know what I'm saying? They're trying to like, and it's just, it's no go, especially with the interwebs and Twitter and stuff. It's like, you know, anybody with any sense can see that, let's see, if you look at a flag that is saying, let's kill all the black people and, you know, white supremacy reign, maybe you might want to pull that back. And so they're having a hard time trying to really see that that's what they need to do. And unfortunately for me, being black, I'm sick of it being at the expense of bodies piling up.
Well, yeah.
Have you noticed how the bodies are piling up?
They kind of, like cordwood, you mean?
Yeah, no, it's just, we've been going, like, in the last, like, year, there's been, like, just a toll of black people just dead, okay? Not even whispering, they dead. And so white people now are sort of, and so when someone says, oh, wow, we need to pull our symbol away, now they're trying to have discussions. I'm like, there is no discussion.
Well,
out of control.
That's why I started the program, Sandra, talking about this is a long con. Anybody who expects a two-thirds majority vote on the part of both houses of that legislature for them to say, well, you know, it only took 155 years, but and the Klan and Jim Crow and segregation and right. It only took 155 years, but you're right. We're both going to vote in both houses, two-thirds majority. Flag's got to go somewhere else.
Well, no, the whole idea of two-thirds, that's why I was laughing when,
yeah,
you know, Senator Graham Cracker, they all came out because they realized, oh, shit, it's a supermajority.
Now, wait a minute, don't say, wait, Sandra, you can't say Senator Graham Cracker and came out in the same sentence. It's going to get confusing.
Listen, that motherfucker, he a fucking, you know, he's probably a bottom. At that,
Jesus.
That's the thing.
Yeah, you may be gone for a couple of months, but you don't lose anything off your fastball.
No, I know that's a fool. That fool is a bottom. Otherwise, he would have came out if he was banging. You know, he accepted. So because he's being penetrated, he gotta like step light. That's the problem with living in patriarchy. You know, when you're being fucked, you gotta like keep it on the
step end. Off, right?
No, listen, that fool, but it took him about a minute to come correct. But the problem is that they got two-thirds. So they don't have no say.
It ain't going to happen.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm... That's
padlock. The padlock
is the final...
The padlock,
yes,
is going to stay at the top of the flagpole. And see, here's the funny thing. I mean, this really is a public versus private kind of discussion. Because that thing, you know, and remember the memorial there, where that flag is flying, is to a Lester Maddox style racist, okay?
Oh shit!
His name just isn't as well known and doesn't come immediately to mind. But the thing is, That could be moved to private property. And you know how I know this? I know this because if you are driving northbound on I-65 through Tennessee, there is this great big hideous statue of, I can't remember if it's Nathan Bedford Forrest or Stonewall Jackson, on this really ugly rearing up charger and a whole bunch of Confederate battle flags, and it's private property and nobody can do a damn thing about it. And then there's, and then there's the Confederate Heritage Park with the great damn big Confederate flag flying at it on I-95 outside Richmond.
Well, no, but it's really interesting because what I find really entertaining is that, you know, the corporate media has decided to take this on, but they forgot that, you know, the whole private sphere, i.e. two-thirds, you know, and then they have to realize that, oh, shit, we can't just make this go away. There's a process. And all the crack-cracks, they ain't down with this. It's like, what, 9 niggas I killed? We don't give a fuck. See, that's the thing that they missing. They missing the whole sort of, they don't care. And you know, in the sort of corporate media, there's supposed to be some sort of concern.
Well, right.
And we ain't got...
And you know, you got Chris Saliza in the Washington Post talking about what an amazing display of how Nikki Haley really understands the immigrant experience.
No, she don't understand shit.
I about puked on my own shoes. I mean,
well,
these people in the for-profit media? I mean, are they getting stuff like beamed in from Earth? Are they in some alternate universe? Really, she understands if she understands the immigrant experience, then why is she calling herself Nikki?
Yeah, you know what? She don't understand shit. And also, you know, as far as I know, all them crackheads are like, no, that shit ain't coming down. As far as I heard, you know, there's plenty of people who will vote, and it's two-thirds. So the narrative ain't going to work out.
Let's not forget, part of this was a political assassination because Senator Clemente Pinckney was an active sworn member of the Senate of South Carolina and got killed deader than a mackerel. All right? So we're not talking about an assassination, but if that had been a white South Carolina senator, there'd be parades in the streets, okay? And that man is going to lie in state under that flag because that flag lies on that state capital property.
No, it's, you know, it's completely out of control for, you know, the crack-cracks who want to pretend that this country isn't what it is, which is a sort of racist, I don't even know what, you know, what to say about what's going on, but I don't know if you saw that whole sort of trending of D-Ray go home. Do you see any of that?
No, what?
That's that guy from Ferguson. An activist. He was in.
Yeah,
and he, you know, talked about.
And he speaks very eloquently, and.
Yeah, he talks about white supremacy, and you know, white people don't want to hear about it.
And white privilege. White folks don't want to hear about white privilege either. I mean,
yeah.
you want the most stunning, stirring example of white privilege I've seen in a long time. It's a little bitty, tiny thing, Sandra, but it's freaking huge. When is the last time you heard of a police force capturing a wanted for murder black man and taking him to get some Burger King?
No, I don't know. I missed that one, but I did hear about...
Because that's what they did. That's what they did for Rufy.
No, not only that, but he had a bulletproof vest. Did you see that?
Yes.
Yeah, they had a bulletproof vest on him to protect him from, I don't know who's going to take him out, you know, but, and Burger King.
Yeah, I mean, and the Burger King just put me on the floor because two things occurred to me right then, white privilege and have it your way.
Yeah, that sort of goes, sounds like a campaign, Bob.
You just murdered 9 people in a church. Where are you going next, Rufy? I'm going to Burger King.
Right. And then white privilege and a little song. Yeah, that works. I like it. And let me just sort of like, the main reason why I'm calling is because we got, Obama saying nigga, but that nigga wants TPP. I think he's full of shit. All this is quite good for him so he can get on the board of Carlisle. I don't trust him. I think he's a fucking pig.
He'll hold out for Goldman Sachs.
This all works well for him. In the meanwhile, you know, we're looking at some sort of, I can't do Alex Jones, but motherfucker is quite right about what's coming down the pipe. Motherfuckers are sitting around, you know, thinking whatever, but they just, you know, they just paved the way for some sort of, if you want to breathe, you need to pay X corporation. That's kind of what it is, right?
Buy your water, buy your air. It's going to be like living, yeah. It's going to be like living on the moon. And you'll
know. It really is outrageous.
And I don't, you know, I don't mean to rub salt in any wounds or anything, Sandra. But when everybody was going, hoo-wee, oh, we just beat TPP. Oh, my goodness, look how the... And I just sat back and went, please. This is going to happen. And again, it doesn't give me any pleasure to say that. But, and it's kind of what I was talking to Diane about. What corporations want, corporations get. And Diane says, I hate that they have that leverage. But they do.
No, but not only that, but I don't think people realize that this will go for 6 years, and the next president and Obama will, you know, there's the TTIP, and then there's TISA, which is high, all your medical records, global, all your financial records, global, anything on the internet, global. So, I don't even think Americans even understand. Like, let's just see. I don't want my water to have arsenic, and I'm going to sue. And then you find out that, oops, you need to go to some sort of star chamber. You don't matter. Drink the water.
This is the thing.
I don't know how else to explain it, you know?
No, and that's the thing. I know you've read it. Or what there is to be read of it, and it's frightening. It's terrifying.
It's really.
I mean, there's real world examples. That's why last week I was talking about the country of origin labeling business, and the House of Representatives voted to roll that back because our dear friends and partners in peace, Mexico and Canada, sued us to make us stop saying that meat on our grocery store shelves contained meat from Canada and Mexico. I mean,
And I don't even think people realize that, because I heard somebody, you know, on the plane that I was on talking about, I need to know where the meat is from, as if it's, just something casual. But think about this. With the TPP, you have five rich countries harmonizing everything with five third world countries. That's what you need to know.
Yeah.
This is what we're up against. We're going to harmonize everything with Malaysia.
Yeah, and you know what? I bet if you asked the Malaysians, they'd say, no, we don't want y'all to be like us. We want to be like you.
Yeah, it works for them.
But I'm just saying, for
us, what the hell? And for New Zealand, what the fuck? And for Japan, what the hell? In the meanwhile, Brunei, they get to stone women. And, you know,
But we're going to have some very stringent human
rights.
Well,
we ain't having shit.
Rules.
You know, that's some bullshit. I mean, I am beyond appalled with, Obama. He is so, sleazy with his, I'll go on Mark Maron's, podcast and say nigger. That'll distract him. I'm sorry, Paul.
But didn't it work?
That's
what I'm saying. It was all over my feeds yesterday.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I mean about him. I am so through with Obama, because all he wants to do, and you think he ain't going to find this shit with without TAA? Oh, my God, he's going to sign it.
Of course. And
yeah.
No, I mean, it's like I get these Tea Party, teabagger kind of press releases every day. And it's all about, you know, they've renamed it, of course, Sandra. Now it's Obama trade, you know, just like Obamacare.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, it's Obama trade. And you would never know it to read any of these things that the Republicans are falling all over themselves to vote for it. I mean, if Chinless Mitch did not want that to happen in the Senate, it would not have happened.
No, exactly. I mean, and the thing is, I can only think that I guess in the next 60 days they actually have to reveal the trade agreement or what? I don't know.
I don't either, because I keep reading conflicting stories. The way it works out is that once we find out what's in it, if it's fast track, nobody gets to amend it.
I understand that, but you know that Bush, the trade agreements, you know, he made that available before fast track. That's why this is so outrageous.
Yeah, because. Well, yeah, when you can't even do as much as Dim Leader did.
That's what I'm saying. It's, it's sort of, I do wonder what's next. And also, Bob, I do wonder what's going to happen when, you know, some municipality is telling their, community that, oh no, you need to drink this water because of TPP. I actually think that the enforcement aspect of this is going to be really difficult, because no American's going to accept that some tribunal said you need to do this. This is the thing. It's like, this can all pass, but institutionally, we're not taught to think that we need to obey some tribunal. Because that's what's going on.
Yeah, well, I mean, the right wing would have you think that we're not, because, you know, we don't want to listen. I mean, you got Mike Huckabee. If I'm president, I won't listen to 9 unelected black robe blah blah activist judges blah blah. Well,
now we're in the star chambers.
Right.
Star chambers.
Exactly.
So I mean, I just wonder, you know, I mean, because see, they forgot to disarm. You know what I'm saying? I mean, the thing about America that's always unique is that, well, it's armed to the teeth, so.
Well, yeah, it is, but the thing is, the people who are armed to the teeth want to shoot the wrong people. And by that I mean each other, anybody that they decided they don't like, you know, you got the whole Clive and Bundy thing. And the other side of the coin too, Sandra, is that who said you will never go? No, you'll never go broke underestimating the American people. Two little examples. Yeah, I'm having my gut problems again, so I'm drinking a lot of clear liquids. One of which is white grape juice, and so I'm looking at my bottle of Welch's white grape juice, and on the label it says made with North American grapes. What percentage of the American populace who looks at made with North American grapes probably thinks that means made with grapes grown in the United States?
Right.
Okay, and I know this.
Right.
I know this is just a little tiny thing. But you know, there are assumptions made about the people. And so I'm also eating yogurt. And so I've got some Chobani Greek yogurt fruit on the bottom. The blood orange is particularly good, by the way. And so I'm reading the label, and it goes, you know, yogurt cultures, and it names all the bacteria. And then it says, I kid you not, evaporated cane juice. And I looked at Agnes, and I went, really? Evaporated cane juice? Hey, honey, what's evaporated cane juice? And she goes, sugar. I said, yeah. But, you know, on the label, you know, for the label reading, you know, organic, you know, want to make sure there's no chemtrails in my yogurt crowd. Oh, well, okay, there's no sugar in this. It's got evaporated cane juice in it instead. Oh, well, okay, that's fine. You know, that's who we're talking about in the American people, Sandra.
Well, I hear what you're saying, but, you know, I do think that, I don't know if you know that this agreement will sort of allow corporations to get right up in Medicare.
Say what?
It will let them sort of, any rule or law that's being made to change Medicare in any way, they're able to step in and, you know, see if their interest is being altered at all. And I don't think that most Americans know.
Hey, I know they don't know. Because if they did, you'd have some teabaggers on little hover rounds going, keep your TPP hands off my Medicare.
Right. So, I mean, that's the sort of thing that's going on.
Yeah, as long as the black guy can't be held personally responsible, they'll remain blissfully ignorant.
Yeah. Well, I mean, basically what I'm trying to say is that I'm sort of wondering how the hell they're going to enforce it, I got to say.
Well, I got to think that's going to be here's my take. Way back when when Bill Clinton gave permanent most favored nation trading status to China.
Yeah.
Because George Bush's uncle Prescott was the head of the U.S. China Chamber of Commerce, and that's who, that's who got the ball rolling. It was all because American capitalists had convinced themselves that if they could just get into the Chinese market, they could get rich, 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 rich. And then they went over to, and I had this all laid out for me one time at a conference in D.C. Then they went over to China and found out that they were going to do business on Chinese terms. And let's say Firestone, for instance, wants to make tires in China. Well, they had to turn over all of their trade processes and all their trade secrets to a Chinese corporation, which then itself began manufacturing the same tires, deliberately undercutting Firestone, because we're using Firestone as the example here. That's what will happen with TPP, too, because all of this is being contemplated as being, the captains of industry saying, oh, you know, we're going to make a killing. And they're going to, frankly, Sandra, they're going to be the ones that wind up getting killed.
Well, I'm just saying, I just think that it's so over the top that there's no way once, you know, you're sort of, I just don't see it being enforced. That's the thing. It's like, okay, what, you have three lawyers and you have three lawyers who are judges who decide that, oh, in California, they can't have, you know, something to keep their air clean. So now we're going to pollute it. I mean, who's going to, you know, how are they going to enforce that? That's the thing.
Well, they'll turn around and they'll enforce it through the Congress or through our court system. I mean, it's going to be the food. I mean, the business with China or Canada and Mexico suing the United States over meat labeling. The House of Representatives, they weren't asked. They were told, you must pass this bill so we can come into compliance with the ruling, or else they...
Right. Well, no, I understand that. But
and they jumped, Sandra.
I still think that so, you know, there's only so much that's going to go on before people are like...
Make it go away? Yeah.
Well, not make it go away, but I just don't, you know, I just think that I just don't see all this being enforced. I mean, you have breast cancer, and all of a sudden, you know, the doctor says, yeah, we have this drug, but it costs $200,000.
Oh, and that,
who are they going to sell it to?
Well, remember when the head of Bayer, talking about some cancer drug a couple of years ago, said, let's face facts, we're not making this for the Indians, we're making this drug for people who can afford to buy it.
Okay, so, no, but... Okay, yeah, so you're saying that what? We're just going to immiserate ourselves?
I don't see... Well, I mean, you know what my position's been for a long time, Sandra. As long as the cable stays on, we're Haiti with cable. We will amuse ourselves to death. And I don't even like, I don't like saying it. I think that one of the places you'll see a lot of this play out is in areas of like drugs. For instance, there was a story in the New York Times a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, and you know, my pink little ears perked up because, you know, I'm a cholesterol crisis. They have developed a new genetically based therapy for cholesterol management. It's a once every 2 months injection. It has side effects that are concurrent with a placebo. And it's going to cost in excess of $10,000 a year. And it's just about made it past all the basic trials. And it works like crazy. I mean, people with worse cholesterol than mine, you give them the shot, and the cholesterol just goes down and stays down because it's working on some sort of subcellular level. And that could be a life-saving amazement for millions upon millions of people around the planet. And they ain't going to get it because none of these trade agreements work in favor of people who need. All of these trade agreements work in favor of corporations who want.
Yeah, well, no, you just become some way of extraction. You're a profit center. If you can't afford it, too bad for you. It reduces the population, which is also, you know, in line with their Malthusian philosophy. So, I mean, yeah, I'm just sort of thinking, you know, that, I don't know, some sort of huge uprising has to happen. There's nothing else left, really. You know, because while people are sitting around watching whatever, they completely, with this act today, they've turned everything over to some sort of
pro-consulate?
Yeah, I don't know. It's just, you know, I'm just trying to avoid the Alex Jones, you know, because at the end of the day, you know, the Congress has sort of, what does Congress do now? They do nothing.
Well, how many decades was it ago that someone, and I can't remember who, and maybe it was from the wrong side, but they said Congress will eventually reduce itself to a debating society. And, you know, when I think back, for instance, to 2003 and or 2002 and the so-called debate over the Iraq War, that's all it was a debating society. Because all they had to do was pick up the Constitution and say, no, 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 Mr. President, we do the war declaring. You ask us and we declare war. None of this authorization for use of military force. We either declare war or we don't. And you know what? That would have been something that was right in line with the libertarians and the right wingers and everything, but they were all humped up in a frenzy to go kill some Muslims. Whatever it took to do that. So that is, I mean, that's where Congress has been headed for a very long time, isn't it?
I know there's a 90-day process for this, but, you know, do these liberals actually think that Obama's going to wait for the TAA? He's going to sign this shit tomorrow, I'm sure.
Oh, as quick as they can get it on his desk, right?
Anyway,
I know we're just a little bundle of light and sunshine, aren't we, Sandra?
Oh, I know. No, I wish I had something amusing to talk about, but I don't.
No, I was thinking about you just the other day and thinking about how delightful our little moments of shallow were, and I'm fresh out of shallow.
I don't even know what the latest is, you know?
Well,
It's bad.
Well, let's see. Let me check here. I may have one shallow for us because it's tradition, right? Yeah, there it is. In line with the conversation about public pressure, after a great deal of public pressure, the Orem Owls, The minor league baseball team of Orem, Utah, has canceled its Caucasian Heritage Night.
Well, that's in response to the kill all Negroes in church?
Well, kind of. I mean, the story's dated June the 20th. But they issued a pissy little statement on the way out the door. Minor league baseball. Now, bear in mind, Utah is 85% white folks.
It is. Crack, yeah.
Minor league baseball and the Orem Owls, and that's spelled O-W-L-Z, by the way, is about baseball, togetherness, and family fun for all fans, for fans of all races, religions, and orientations. Our goal in this promotion, like any of our promotions, is to have fun and make fun of everyday normalcies. Our night was to include Wonder Bread on burgers with mayonnaise, clips from shows like Friends and Seinfeld, and trying to solve the vertical leaping challenge. Well, I'm all better now, aren't you?
Oh, my God. Well, listen, there is one thing. I mean, I don't know how many days ago, but, you know, I've been so out of the mix that, wait, so Alex Rodriguez is hitting balls for the Yankees?
Wait, what?
Did he just hit his 3,000? I mean, is he actually playing for the Yankees?
I thought. I mean, he's out of the wilderness now.
Yeah, because he just hit, you know, another home run. But I'm like, damn, that.
That didn't take long.
That is.
No, he did. He just hit his 3,000th hit. And the guy who caught the ball says he'll give the ball to the Yankees if they'll meet his list of demands.
All right. Well, no, because I was like, damn, I can't believe it. But then I was told that, well, they owe him all his money, so they might as well put him to work. And so that made me think about football and what a shitty, shittiest deal their union got for them. Because he's still getting paid, Rodriguez.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing. And Rice, you know, he can't find nobody else to slap, and he's still not with a team, right?
Dang it.
Lord.
No, it all depends on, I think it is what kind of deal you got. But it's also where you're playing, too, isn't it? I mean, there's Ray Rice.
I guess.
You know, Ray's in Baltimore, right?
Mm.
But Yankees fans, you know, in the final analysis, they don't give a shit. Can you hit the ball? Put him on, get him off the bench.
Well, anyway, the only other thing I wanted to mention was, like, a fancy Obama going on Mark Maron's podcast to say nigger. Can you know what I mean? Come on. I'm sorry. I'm just.
Well, okay. From the Department of Paranoia, was that planned? I mean, was there a White House communications staff meeting say, Mr. President, as quick as you can, you're going to say the line, it's not just about not being able to say nigger in public.
Yeah, no, I just, you know, the whole thing just stinks to the high heaven, you know?
Well, I mean, Mark Maron does a great podcast, but, you know, why him, why then?
No, it's just sort of like, and all of a sudden, him and Michelle are going, you know, doing the eulogy for the dead black people, but he ramming that TPP through.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. It's, you know, I think between them, they're sitting back thinking, from now till January 20th, 2017, let's just punk them, and maybe by the end, they'll look like that New Yorker cover, because they already do in the hearts and minds of a whole bunch of America. I mean, you do know that Obama has been directly blamed for the massacre in Charleston.
No, what's so evil, though, to me? It's like, okay, Negro, you know all about systemic racism. you gonna wait 6-7 years into your shit to talk about it? I don't know. I just found the whole thing really just cynical. And I'm sorry. I even think less of him now than I did before he did the interview, which is pretty bad because I thought quite less of him then.
I understand nobody can answer those questions except him. And
I agree.
I don't think he's going to, but I think some of it goes back to, and maybe I'm wrong, I think some of it goes back to him really, really not wanting to believe the awful, ugly, mean-spirited, hateful truth about a whole bunch of this nation.
Well, no, I do too. I think so too. I mean, I think that people don't realize that he was brought up, you know, white people brought him up. And when Shirley, what was the woman's name from the agriculture department? She said,
"Oh yeah,
he's not really, she basically said he's not really black."
Yeah.
And she didn't say it like that, but that's what she meant.
After she got thrown under the bus out of one of those bullshit videos that creepy dude, videographer creep, yeah.
On the other hand, intellectually, I know he's, you know, because that interview, he talked about systemic racism, and it's really disturbing because we've never heard him talk about systemic racism and the police, systemic racism and housing, systemic racism and the, 2008 subprime situation, systemic racism and Bob, I'm sorry,
because it was present in all of it, yeah, and and it's after, you know, it's only after the massacre in Charleston that what we got the state, what was the statement there? So much of it's run together, but you know, there were some pretty strong words there.
Yeah, it's all whatever. I'm just sort of, you know, I'm as jaded as he's sort of presented himself. Actually.
Well, you know, that's okay because Vice President Nimrata Haley can lead us proudly into our post-racial future.
Oh, maybe she can hook up with Paiute, you know, get some advice.
I see her more as vice president. You know, she can't be Lindsey Graham's vice president because they both come from the same state, and that's illegal unless it's Bush and Cheney. And then you set up a dummy mailbox in Wyoming. But I could see her being Scott Walker's vice president. I don't know if I could see her being Rand Paul's vice president.
Well, he'll be assisting her the whole time, you know, set up.
Right.
No, I think he's pretty much done. I don't. You know, I'm a bit confused. I think maybe. Scott Walker. That's what I think.
Well, Jebby's. You know, Jebby would take her in a heartbeat, wouldn't he?
I guess, but he's not proving to be very savvy. That guy.
I still like the fact that Jeb with an exclamation point stands for just elect Bernie.
It's almost time for you to go, but I think Hillary needs to, you know, beware. You know, Bernie Sanders is kind of getting
maybe it's just because of the nature of the bubble that is my Facebook feed, but I see a whole lot of Bernie excitement out there.
Mm.
And there's a desire to see somebody talk about TPP and to talk about too big to fail and in terms that we all can understand. And so far, there's only one person doing that.
That's true. So anyway, I'll let you go, and it's been real.
Oh, I hope it doesn't take so long next time, Sandra. It's awful good hearing from you.
All right, take care.
Later.
Bye.
The one and only Sandra calling from Southern California. Hopefully, maybe tomorrow we'll get a report in from Tim from L.A. He's on the road up at UU General Assembly up in Oregon. I'd love to hear from him. Thanks, everybody, for helping out this evening. Thanks, Ralphs. And our anonymous contributor still has $75 on the table that this contributor would like to see get some friends so we can be done with fundraising for this evening. Thanks again for tuning in this evening. Sorry I wasn't here last night. I'll do everything in my power to be here tomorrow night. Hey, we got to get out of here. Always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.